A great victory for Palestinian diplomacy. That's how the Palestinians are reacting to being granted membership of the international police organization Interpol. But it hasn't been welcomed by everyone. Israel had earlier admitted to trying to delay the vote, arguing that Palestine is not a state, and that makes it ineligible for Interpol membership. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry, though, says membership reinforces law in the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip.
You had said in June that you would give up the short once Tesla begins making money.
3 years ago, this company was supposed to be making money now. And now, it's supposed to be making money by 2020. This company is structurally unprofitable. Its capital structure is way too leveraged. It took on SolarCity for $8 billion in assumed debt and stock issuance. SolarCity had negative EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation. So the drain to the shareholders on SolarCity alone is about $1 billion a year.
China's hunger for food delivery driving a surge in deadly accidents. Electric scooters and rickety three-wheelers weaving through rush hour are now swarming the country's streets, driven by an estimated 3 million couriers and rising. The online food order market ballooned by more than 40% from January to July, and during that time, 76 injuries and deaths involving delivery drivers were recorded in Shanghai alone.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's September 29th. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day getting underway. We have a nice show for you planned for today. Our Friday regulars are here. A little bit later in the show, we'll try to get you some cheap airfare and talk to Rick Sini at faircompare.com. He'll be with us with some cheap fares out of Chicago, and we'll talk to him about some other aviation issues that cropped up in the news this week and travel issues. Paul Nolte is here as well from Kingsview Asset Management, and we'll bring in Paul momentarily. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Asian shares were slightly higher today following a rebound. Record close on Wall Street, except for Japan, where a pause in the dollar strengthening dampened optimism among exporters. Traders in Asia generally muted their work this morning overall, as market players are weighing in on an anticipated rate hike by the Federal Reserve, possibly in December. On the rest of the markets in Asia this morning, the Hang Seng is up 132 points, the Shanghai generally flat. The Nikkei is off just a bit. The Europe markets this morning, indices in Europe, the FTSE is up about 0.5%. The DAX is up about 1/3. And the CAC in France is up just a little bit this morning, just a fraction, 3 points. Crude oil at $51.58 a barrel. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. London's Transport Authority says the commissioner there will meet with the chief executive of Uber next week. The meeting with Uber's CEO comes after the transit authorities there decided to strip the ride-hailing service of its license to operate in the city. Authorities say Friday today, the meeting will take place in London. The city's transportation agency, Transport for London, said last week it would not renew Uber's license when it expires September 30th, citing a lack of corporate responsibility. This is a story that many communities around the world are watching, other communities where Uber operates watching it very closely. Farmers fear Puerto Rico's small but diverse agriculture sector may never recover from the hurricane that hit the island there, Hurricane Maria. While most of the island's food is imported, statistics from the governor show employment in agriculture growing, and the area cultivated up to 50% in the 4 years before Maria. But all that came to a halt when the strongest hurricane in a century hit the island. Ornamental plant growers estimate they've lost about $1.5 million. Dairy farmers say some 700 cows are missing or dead, just part of the crisis that's facing Puerto Rico. China has stepped up pressure on automakers to accelerate development of electric cars there by its first year for target year for production quotas, but delayed the rollout until now, 2019. The announcement is the latest step in the aggressive plans to make China a leader in electric car technology. This is something that the electric car industry in the United States is watching very closely as well. It is Friday. That's our regular guest spot here for Paul Nolte, who's from Kingsview Asset Management, Senior Portfolio Manager, SVP there. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Happy end of the quarter. Last trading day of the quarter.
Lots happening today, I guess. It's a big day for putting away some books for the last quarter and getting ready for the next. But what did you like over the week in the economy?
You know, it was kind of interesting taking a look at some of the numbers. We saw a little bit of a pickup in some of the manufacturing numbers, especially in Europe. And Europe is still looking pretty good to us. The housing market looking a little bit weaker, some. And we're starting to see some of the impacts of the hurricanes on the economic data. So the weekly jobless claims picked up, so which means that next Friday when we get the jobs report, you're going to start seeing the impact of the hurricane on the jobs report starting with this next one next week and probably see the impact through the end of the year.
Do you think that's going to be a big hit on the jobs report?
You'll probably see weaker jobs numbers than you ordinarily would. We've been running at about 175,000 new jobs. That number may be down significantly from there. But again, most economists understand that. It's going to be an adjustment, and nobody's quite sure how much that adjustment's going to be. But we saw that with Hurricane Sandy. We've seen it with Katrina. So it's not unusual. It's just the magnitude.
Revised GDP numbers, 3.1%.
That was good. And actually what was interesting about the GDP numbers is a lot of that came from revisions of inventories. Inventory levels were a lot higher than was originally expected. And you think, well, all right, so they're making a lot of stuff. But the fact that the inventories are higher means they're not selling a lot of stuff on the other side. So that has the potential at least to reverse. And obviously, we'd like to see it for more than just one quarter. So on a year-over-year basis, we're a little bit above 2%, or hanging around 2%. And actually, this quarter's GDP, according to the Atlanta Fed, running just above 2%. So it's at this point looks to be a little bit more of an outlier than the new normal.
I mentioned in the opening what we're seeing with some of the surveys of folks thinking that a federal rate hike would come in December. Interesting comments from the Federal Reserve Chairman this week, Janet Yellen. She thinks they made a little mistake in what they were thinking ahead.
They're really kind of struggling with what's happening in the economy. And normally what they call the Phillips curve is the trade-off between employment and inflation. When employment levels get down to these levels, what they call the natural rate of unemployment, you normally see inflation pick up because we can't find enough people. We have to pay them more to stay. We don't want them to leave. And that is where we pick up inflation. The problem is we're not seeing it in the economy, and that's, from the Fed's perspective, a big issue. They know how to fight inflation. They don't know how to fight falling prices, and that's the fear that central banks around the world have, and part of the reason why we've gone through this quantitative easing around the world. And we're now starting to see banks starting to take that back. The ECB is starting to talk up that way, and we may see a little bit higher interest rates in the future because of that.
She said something that sort of made my head spin a little bit. She said, we'll move forward with gradual rate of increases until it becomes too fast or something like that. It was sort of a jumbled sort of, I'm like, wait, what?
And that's the ongoing debate in the Fed. We're going to be data dependent. Which means that she indicated they were definitely going in December, and that's part of the reason why the percentage rate they're anticipating that hike went from roughly 35% to 70%. So now it's pretty much indicated they're going to raise rates. But out of that side of her mouth, she said, yeah, we're going to raise rates. The other side said, well, but if the economy shows signs of slowing down, then we're going to stop. So a very mixed message with the marketplace.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, a Thursday rally left the major stock indexes higher. The Standard & Poor's 500 at a record high, advancing 3 points to 2510. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 40 points to finish at 22381. The NASDAQ Composite gained a fraction of a point. Walmart's e-commerce site is preparing to launch its own private label brand, which will include more than 60 food and household items. Walmart purchased Jet.com last year for $3 billion in order to increase its digital presence. Southwest Airlines says the recent hurricanes will mean a loss of $100 million in third quarter revenue. In all, Southwest canceled about 5,000 flights in Texas, Florida, and the Caribbean during and after Hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria. And today's National Coffee Day. Dunkin' Donuts is offering a free coffee with the purchase of a medium or large. Krispy Kreme is giving out one free hot or iced coffee per day through Sunday, and Keurig.com is celebrating with a 20% coupon code. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 523 here on The Opening Bell. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management, going over some of the things from the last week, this past week in the economy. I guess tax reform, Paul, is front and center, the tax cuts. What have you seen now from the official plan that's out there? I'm doing air quotes that we didn't see before.
It's just a matter of filling in some of the blanks as far as what the tax rates are going to be, what are they anticipating as far as deductions, deduction eliminations, increasing the personal exemption, et cetera. So we get a little bit more information. What was released was about 9-10 pages of what will ultimately be about 100-120-page proposal. And then we go through what I call the sausage-making process. It's got to go through Congress. It's got to go through and all the different lobbying groups, and everybody else is going to put their two cents in. So what's being proposed today is going to be very different than what ultimately gets passed, if anything gets passed, over the next 3 to 6 months.
And you mentioned a couple of the things left blank there. I mean, as somebody who likes math a lot, I'm sure that concerns you a little. You can't have empty blanks in a math equation.
Well, no, it's not that. It's just they didn't flesh everything out. You know, here's the highlights. Yeah. So you got the Reader's Digest version of what the law will be. So there's a lot of things that we really don't know about yet. And ultimately, it's going to be, what they're positioning it as, very pro-growth. This is going to generate a lot of growth. And that's what ultimately is going to pay for it, is the higher economic activity. And obviously, Democrats don't agree with that. And so that's where that horse trading part is going to be coming along, is whose ox is getting gored and what interest group, et cetera. So that's where you're going to see a lot more posturing.
From an economist's point of view, though, there is some concern here moving forward, isn't there?
There is, because it's been laid up as Reagan II. You know, it's going to be very sweeping, a lot of changes, similar to what we saw with Reagan's tax proposal. The difference is in where we are in the economy. During Reagan's era, the overall debt levels much lower, valuations in the stock market much lower, interest rates too. Much lower, and economic growth much lower today than we saw during his period of time. So the knock-on effects and the impact to the economy are likely to be very different than what we experienced during the Reagan tax cut era.
Since we have been on the air last week, since you were here last week, you got some mail in the mailbag.
Absolutely.
Questions about our inflation conversation from last Friday. You want to address that?
Yeah, what's interesting, and we talked about it a little bit in the first part of it, is the issue that the Fed has with inflation. And, we talk about inflation not being high enough and people scratching their heads going, well, that's a good thing. You know, I don't want high inflation. If you're a central banker, you want to have some inflation in the economy. And as we mentioned, if prices are falling, or we're getting into a deflationary environment, the Fed and central banks do not have tools in their toolbox to combat that. And mentally, from a consumer's perspective, what it does is it slows down spending. If I know I'm going to go out and buy a refrigerator, and I think in the next 6 months that probably is going to come down in price, I might hold off on buying that refrigerator, unless, of course, mine is dead, then I need it. But if I'm looking to buy different things that I don't necessarily have to buy this second, I can hold that off and wait for prices to come down. And from an economic perspective, that means that overall growth is slowing. I want people to spend money to get the economy going. So there has to be a little bit of inflation. So what's good for the consumer, you and I, isn't necessarily good for the population as a whole when everybody is waiting to buy at lower prices. So part of the reason why the Fed would like to see a little bit higher inflation in the system.
What do you like here at the end of the week?
You know, it's interesting. September has been kind of a reversal for the beginning of the year. So for the first 8 months of the year, technology has done great. International investing has done very well. That's kind of flipped around in the month of September. The growth area and international hasn't done as well. The dollar strengthened. The parts of the market that have not done well all year have picked up. So energy is starting to pick up. So we're not yet rotating portfolios away from technology and international. We still like those markets, and we think actually this might be a little bit more of a correction to those sectors because they've done so well. So we're minding our minding the store a little bit and just waiting for some of those prices to come back down a little bit to increase our exposure in those key, we believe, at least key long-term areas of the market.
All right. Sounds good, Paul. Have a great weekend. We'll see you again next Friday.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can find Kingsview, by the way, at kingsview.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 540. Thank you for getting up with us on this Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Travelers who check at least one bag when flying domestically are paying more overall than they did before airlines began unbundling fares back in 2008 and charging separately for checked baggage. That's according to a new report by the Government Accountability Office. Rick Sini is the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com. He's with us this morning from Dallas. And Rick, does this report tell us something that we didn't know before?
Yeah, well, we knew a couple of things. Well, you sort of, it sort of makes sense. Essentially, a study was done over the last 9 years on whether or not after the spring of 2008, the first bag fee from American at $15, now typically $25, actually had people paying more for their total ticket price with a check bag than they did when it was bundled into the airfare. As you might expect, for those people that don't check a bag anymore, actually it was good news. They don't pay quite as much as they would have, but for those people that do check bags are paying a bit more. That's sort of makes sense, which is very rare when it comes to airline fees. I think the thing that caught my eye the most was the eye-popping number of $7.1 billion for check bag fees and for change fees. And by the way, that's, you know, the last year ending in last September, so we're years behind in data, so it's going to be even more this year. And I will note that Southwest Airlines doesn't have either a change fee or a first check bag fee. So they're not participating in any of that largesse.
Yeah, I saw the graph on this, and it goes from, you know, from 2008 to now. I mean, there's a huge jump in that area. Do we expect anything to come from this GAO report, or are we just going to sit back and keep taking these fees?
Well, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I've seen at least 10 or 11 senators who got charged a bag fee at the airport try to do some sort of legislation related to regulating fees or removing fees. I just don't see that happening anytime in the future. They can't even do hardly anything in Congress today, so let alone do something like putting some legislation around fees or regulating them even more. We might see the Department of Transportation try to do something along those lines, maybe get them to actually disclose more of the fees, because they don't disclose things like more legroom fees and a variety of other fees that they charge. So maybe we'll get some more reporting, but I doubt we'll see any legislation.
With the number that high, though, you have to believe that the airlines would fight tooth and nail to keep it in place.
Oh, you can bet on that. That's part of their new business model, which is, you know, having these sort of extra fees that are on there. At some point, you're going to see a lot more bundling of those fees where you take three of the fees that you hate to pay for, but they're going to take the three and then discount them by 40%. And they're going to offer them to you on your cell phone as you're entering the airport, for example, on the native app. So it's always good to sign up for the loyalty programs that are free for the airlines in order to see some of that stuff. It might actually be a good deal for consumers at some point.
Is this basically, you kind of alluded to it, but this is how the airlines are making money nowadays?
Well, if you took that $7 billion and mapped it to the overall profitability of airlines last year, that's pretty close to their total overall profit. So, you know, if you think that they're flying at break even and all these fees are essentially providing their profit, so it's not too far away from being almost exactly what their profitability is.
Well, and the one good part of this report is, I mean, you said that, you know, passengers who are not checking their bags are paying less. So there is a way to continue to fly cheaply.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think again, this is almost a decade ago when we had the first one. There's lots of ways to try to get around this. I mean, the easiest way clearly is not to check a bag. You can achieve elite status. You can get branded credit cards. You need to look and see what the branded credit card fee is, typically anywhere from $60 to $80 a year, maybe the first year waived. But if you're flying twice a year with your family and paying $150 or $200 round trip, it's certainly worth the money to actually get the branded credit card in those cases.
Yeah, from a flying consumer standpoint, I have to applaud Southwest Airlines, but you have to wonder how long that's going to continue if they see what's happening at these other airlines. What is Southwest getting out of this deal?
Well, if you ask their marketing department, they'll say that they're getting more passengers because passengers have more loyalty to Southwest because of this. I think if you ask the Southwest investors, they'd say, why aren't we participating in this?
Right.
So I think I expected them not to be able to hold out as long as they have. This is basically something that I would have expected over the last two or three years to actually start to roll back. They did tweak it a little bit here and there in some places, but essentially – I think at some point they won't be able to hold out. You have four airlines that control a little over 80% of all traffic in the United States. American, Delta, United all charging these fees, and Southwest not. It seems like they're at a competitive disadvantage in those cases. The question is, are they selling billions of dollars in extra tickets? I think their investors probably say no. The marketers at Southwest are saying yes. At the moment, the marketers are winning.
I know you're reporting, and we've talked about this before, but who is the biggest offender in terms of these fees? Which airline?
They're all very similar now for check bag fees. Of course, we mentioned Southwest. Typically, that's $25 each way for a check bag fee, $200 for domestic change fees, $300 for international change fees. They're very similar in what they charge. The last thing an airline wants to do is, you know, have a senator go and say, hey, you know, why are you charging $350 and everybody else is changing $300? We'd already seen this particular study was requested by a congressperson, and every time I've seen the senator get charged a bag fee, they run to the microphone ready for legislation to remove bag fees. I doubt that will happen anytime soon, but just generally, they want to make sure that they're in competition with the other folks and make sure they don't rock the boat too much.
All right. Rick, any deals get us out of town?
Yeah, no, I was looking actually for October timeframe, mid to late October. If you're heading out to the Northwest, Vancouver, Seattle, Portland, actually Portland being the cheapest, under $200 round trip. Vancouver and Seattle sort of in the low 200s round trip. West Coast, Los Angeles is about $100 cheaper than it is to fly to San Francisco at $160 versus $250. If you're heading out to the East Coast, surprisingly, New York City is the cheapest now at $270. That's about $50 more than it was last time we chatted. Boston and Washington, D.C. even higher. And then as you go to other locations, for example, Atlanta and sort of the mid part of Florida and some other places in late October, you're looking in a high 270. So the best bets are really Northwest and the West Coast right now. And I'm even surprised Denver actually has come up about $100 in that time frame at about 250. It was about 150 last week.
All right. Happy travels, Rick.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
Rick Cini is the chairman and founder of FareCompare.com in Dallas. You can follow him on Twitter at Rick Cini. Find more at FareCompare.com. A couple of other notes on this story. The profit model is one that is so good for American Airlines that the CEO of the company talked about how his company will never lose money again based on this model. And the Associated Press in his story said from 1978 through 2013, American's cumulative profit was $1 billion. Now, conversely, by the end of this year, the airline will have earned $19.2 billion in pre-tax income over just the last 4 years. And there's one other aviation and travel note this morning. Elon Musk is presenting a speech today at the International Astronautical Congress in Australia, and he's proposing that one of his spaceships might actually be used for aviation and travel around Earth. He says traveling at roughly 18,000 miles an hour, Voyagers could use his spaceship to really take trips from anywhere in the world, from Los Angeles to Honolulu, Hong Kong to Singapore, New York to Paris, in less time than it would take to get your first drink on a normal flight, in some cases getting you there in about a half an hour. Nice to see Elon Musk dreaming big.
with his space company.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:53 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Futures are pointing toward a flat open on Wall Street later. Dow futures off about a point. NASDAQ futures up just a few points, and S&P futures are lower. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Well, good morning to you this morning, Steve. And we're looking at harvest weather continuing over much of the Midwest. So I tell you what, on Monday when we get the weekly crop progress reports, it's going to be looked at very carefully to see what kind of harvest progress we made during this week, because the weather without rain and with the heat that we have had brought the crops on maturity faster, I think, than people thought. And so they've been rolling the combines, and they'll continue to do that.
I had an interesting experience this week. The first, I follow a farmer in central Illinois on Twitter. And yes. He was broadcasting live from his combine while he was harvesting. And I got to ride along in the combine with him for, well, me and about 100 other people who were watching. It was kind of cool watching him do what he does.
And were you seeing the monitor that tells what kind of a volume is moving across the cutting edge of that combine? Because, you know, about every foot you get a reading on what kind of yield you're getting. So were you able to see that as well?
Yeah, he had it set up where you could see the displays and just see everything that he was basically seeing in the cab. And then, of course, the big window out front. It was very cool to watch. He was doing a little bit of play-by-play as well. So,
well, that all started probably a long time ago in the Museum of Science and Industry, because they have a full-size combine in Chicago in the Museum of Science and Industry, and kids can go sit in the combine cab and actually harvest a field in front of them. And it's one of the popular stops, I think, in the Museum of Livestock and Industry. Meanwhile, the preliminary talk, well, I guess they're more than preliminary now. They've been underway for about 3 weeks on NAFTA and what's going to happen to it, getting underway. And I keep seeing reports that they're making faster progress than they thought. But they haven't gotten to the sticky issues yet between Canada and Mexico and the United States. And remembering the World Trade Organization talks that took place over a period of 5 years and 20 meetings before they finally hammered out the World Trade Organization. So I'm not really looking for a hurry-up thing on putting NAFTA back together, but it certainly got the attention of farmers, and it's a big topic of conversation at meetings that are underway right now. So yeah. Trade continues to be vital to American agriculture.
Orion, I saw a story this week from the American Farm Bureau about the total bill for some items at harvest, 3% higher than last year. And the report says the farmer's share of food purchases has been cut in half since the 1970s. To us lay people, what does that mean?
Well, that means that farmers are getting less for what they're producing, and their inputs are really not dropping that much. You know, you take a look at fuel, farmers probably are probably number two in use of fuel. Trucking industry would be first, but farmers would be second. And so when you take a look at the current prices that are very close to price of production, it's a little tougher time. That's why there's so much interest in what goes into the new farm bill that we're supposed to finish up by early next year. So always concerns with the weather and its impact on crops, and the farmers in Texas and in Florida and in the hurricane areas are going to be hurting badly, I think, before they get into the next planting season.
All right. Orion, what's on the show tomorrow morning?
Well, tomorrow morning, we're going to talk to Scott Bentley. He is the head man at World Dairy Expo in Madison, Wisconsin, because next Tuesday, the world's biggest dairy show gets underway at Madison. And so we're going to talk about some of the highlights, some of the changes that they're making, because last year was the 50th anniversary of the show. And I think I've attended all but four or five. So Always look forward to that when we get dairy folks from around the world to come to Madison. So we'll talk about that tomorrow.
All right, Ori and Samuelson, have a great weekend.
Thank you, you too.
And we'll be tuned in tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock, the morning show with Ori and Samuelson and Max Armstrong.